You're at the Coaching Inn, 3D Coaching's virtual pub, where we enjoy conversations with people who are engaged in the world of coaching.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Coaching Inn. I'm Claire Pedrick, and today I'm in conversation with Helen Hopper and Joy Harker, because they're great people. And because they've just written a book called The Art and Psychology of Board Relationships, The Secret Life of Boards. What a fabulous title. So, Joy and Helen, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
So let's not talk about the book to start with, because I'm really interested about you as people. What's the journey? What's your professional and personal, if you want to, journey that's got you to the point where you're ready to write a book like this?
I used to be, years ago, a lawyer and dealing in dispute resolution. And I was always fascinated by human relationships and the dynamic. And I always thought, well, people should not be litigating over this. They should be getting together and mediating and sorting this problem out. And then I moved to being a coach, and I was working with boards, as I am now, and also sitting on boards. So in the educational sector. And also I chaired for a bit the UK board of the ICF. And during that process, I noticed that, you know, the problems of getting down to business weren't just really related to knowing about governance or risk. It was really about the understanding the relationships and having good dynamics between people, and poor dynamics really got in the way of doing proper business. So I was looking for a co-author to write the book with, and somebody with a psychology background. And Helen and I met in the desert in Rajasthan around a campfire at a business retreat. And I mentioned the book to her, and we'd hardly knew each other. And she, quick as a flash, said, "Yes, I'd love to write that with you." And she came from an eminent psychology background. So we took the risk, and here we are.
What an amazing story. Because if you'd gone looking for a, if you'd gone looking for an author, you would not have gone to a campfire in India, would you?
No, that's right, isn't it, Helen?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a completely chance meeting. We were together to talk about compassion in global leadership. And, you know, which is quite a lofty thing, really, but then something really practical came out of the connection. And yeah, so I'm part psychologist. I've had quite an eclectic career, really, what I think is known as a squiggly career these days. So I started out in management consultancy, but I was doing the kind of technical end of it. So computer programming back in the day when computers were steam powered. And I was putting large scale, right, designing and installing large scale systems. And over the years, sort of started to see that the technology is never the tricky bit. It's the people, and not the interesting bit as well in many ways. So we know that most large scale systems integrations fail, and it's usually because people don't want them or don't like them or won't use them. So I really got into the psychology side of things. I worked at SHL in occupational psychology and really learned that side of psychology, psychometrics, that kind of thing. And then I guess I spent a decade wandering around different parts of psychology, so from sort of clinical to psychodynamic, learning different ways of looking at people and people in themselves, in relationships, in groups. And to Joy's point as well, thinking, gosh, sometimes things seem a lot harder than they need to be. What can change that? About 13 years ago, I founded HQ, which is a co-founded HQ, which is a leadership development consultancy. And so for about 20 years, I've been a coach and facilitator, organization design specialist. And I'm very, as well, as Joyce told you with the book, I'm quite impulsive. So she said, "Do you want to do it?" And I said, "Yes." I'm quite impulsive and quite curious. I love to go into places and find out how they tick. I love working with people. And for the book, doing the psychology side of the depth psychology side of the research was really, really fascinating.
So, what do you know now that you didn't know when you started writing?
I think it all comes down to people's behavior being based on how they defend themselves against pressure and all the parts of psychology. So in the book, we talk about the psychology, but we interviewed 40 CEOs, chairs, board members, as well as coaches on to get real life case stories and also to get their views on how to deal with poor dynamics. And it all boiled down to people were defending themselves in various different ways against pressure, and as a result of that, poor behaviors spilled out. So this is a book where we try and really look at what you can do to change that. You know, be it boards that apparently just aren't engaged, and lack of engagement is a way of defending yourself from pressure. Being compliant, through to boards where, you know, people are very emotionally charged, they're falling out, they're polarized because, you know, the emotion and the stress is really affecting the way in which their nervous system behaves.
Yeah,
And
I'd
that's
say, oh, sorry, I'd say
Oh, go on, Helen.
a companion piece to that, which is, I think that's absolutely right, that most difficulties are coming from defensive reactions. And I'd say it's behavior, what people say and do, but and also thought patterns and feelings. The state of mind, the mood of a group and the mood of an individual when they're in that group and afterwards, the prospect of being with them, all of that is coming in quite complicated way from defensive reactions often. And I guess that it's very hard to see those roots and the dynamics, what's happening, and also to find ways to move through them when you're in it. It's really, really hard when you're in it. I suppose that was the surprise. I think our people we interviewed were very good at looking back and thinking, yeah, probably in that was going on, and maybe I was doing this and someone else was contributing that. But remarkably hard when you're in the swirl of a busy swirl of a lot of high pressure things.
So I love how you had these conversations, and I'm just really interested to find out what was different for the people that you had conversations with after they knew what they knew.
Well, we did ask, we did. Do you mean as they went through their careers and were able to reflect and look?
Well, it sounds as though as they were talking to you, they got some insights that they may not have had before. And I'm just wondering what's different now.
I think maybe they have more two types of better awareness. The first is more awareness of themselves and their part in things. So, you know, the whole idea behind the book was not to sort of psychoanalyze your board colleagues, you know, to pigeonhole them. It was the opposite of that, to try and get people to think about what is my part in this? How am I contributing to this? Am I coming with absolute thinking? You know, how could I shift that? How could I have empathy with the person I'm talking to? What is their position? How could I put myself in their shoes? So there was this self-awareness, but also, as Helen said, there was, right, if I see these sorts of things happening, we're likely to be in this sort of situation. So, for example, we talk about the executive non-executive seesaw because you're holding power with other people, you know, who are your peers. The CEO might feel that the chair's encroaching on his territory. And the chair doesn't trust the CEO. We talk about that. And in the book, we identify from our interviewees exactly what were the telltale signs of that happening. So lack of trust, you know, accusing people of things, and you know, holding information back. So if you see that the tips were, if you see those sorts of things, then you might be in that sort of situation. So I think that was, you know, the reflectiveness and the help of coaching, I guess, leading it back to coaching in making you reflect, to think. The world's such a fast-paced world, isn't it? Just taking a few moments to sit back and think. We don't have to achieve everything in 5 minutes. Actually taking an hour to have a thought, have a think about things is often really helpful.
And all you were asking them was to tell you a normal story.
Well, you're making me, I mean, that's a lovely multi-layered question, Claire, because actually asking me that question has made me think about the process of interviewing again and thinking about it. It's a bit like coaching, of the looking back at something with more perspective, helps you, or with a different perspective, helps you see more, and then you can do something with that. And occasionally, people that we interviewed either at the end or when I caught up with them afterwards, and you probably had the same experience, Joy, would say things like, "Oh, I so with there was a chair of a public body that said that 80% of the time that she spent on the work on that board was on the relationships." And you could hear her saying that and then pausing. And afterwards, she said, I hadn't really realized that until it came out of my mouth. But then I did. And so I guess that's a testament to the power of coaching, the power of sitting back, reflecting, looking at things differently. And someone else had a similar thing of saying when they said they were on a board that we call a rubber stamp board that doesn't really have any power. And this person was new and not really getting to contribute or have much influence. And he said, I felt like I might be a bit, foolish or naive, or perhaps they hoped I was. And you think, oh, there's a whole thing to be unpacked there. And the process of just stopping and thinking about it is the key to it, to sort of unlock something.
What you're describing, which I really love, is that you ask these people to help you. Please help me and tell me your story. But actually, in telling their story, they got some really good stuff out of it in the reflective telling stuff. So if you ever get asked to help someone with a book, listeners, it's a bit two-way. It's more two-way than we think it is.
Yeah, or with a podcast,
Yeah,
listeners, because we're
exactly.
getting something from this, Claire. Thank you. Yeah.
Exactly. That's good to know. So, what's your hope for the book? What do you want it to do?
We would like to see it in the wild, in people's hands, people that are working on boards, people that are aspiring to be on boards, people that are coaching, facilitating board developments and board members. It's a resource, and we would like people to read it, take something from it, and then do something with that so that boardrooms become places where people can really get together and do things that matter.
Yeah,
And keep
absolutely. I
using it.
endorse that. Yeah. It was meant to be a practical book, a book full of stories to engage people, but the bottom line being useful. And I think, there's a lot of talk about board members should know about governance and ensure that they understand risk and strategy. But increasingly there's an interest in psychology, but not historically. So if we can just make that more accessible, so it opens people's eyes, so that you can also see that they've got other resources of coaches that they can use, but also they can coach themselves a bit on this, that would be great. And also, I think the other thing that we noticed as we were writing the book is, we took the board context because it fascinated us, and this, it was sort of delving into this mysterious world, perhaps. But actually, it applies equally to teams. It applies to your families, and you see it in politics. The way people behave in politics, in this splitting into good, bad, right, wrong, applies a lot. So we think it would be, really great if it opened people's curiosity to this, and was helpful.
And I love that bit at the beginning about the board becoming more than a sum of its parts and the team becoming more than a sum of its parts.
Yes, and working together on that. Because I think boards often don't quite know if they're a team or a group or what they are, but if they can each play their part, each member can play their part in becoming more than as you say, the sum of the parts, then what potential is there for real effectiveness?
Yeah, and I think that boards today, but most teams actually, are trying to do quite complicated, complex things quickly. And no one can do it all or know it all or be it all. So you do need people, and you need people, or what's best is people that are different from you, because they'll see things from a different angle, they'll have different ideas, they'll have better intuition or different intuition about what the future holds. And none of you have the crystal ball, but collectively you can get a lot closer if a group of people who are diverse along all sorts of dimensions can truly sort of meld their minds and work together on something. So yeah, I do think that groups and particularly boards can become more than the sum of their parts, but it's really tough for boards because they don't spend that much time together. And when they do, quite often there's a lot of set piece work to do, and a huge amount of pressure. There's an information asymmetry. They often don't know that much about the organisation. How could they? Because they have an important but really small role in its day-to-day life. So yes, I think that becoming more than the sum of the parts is absolutely vital.
I so want you to get a sneaky copy into number 10 and the White House, you know.
Well, my dear mother has had a one-woman crusade to get it into the House of Commons Library, and she gave it to her local MP. So hopefully it's there, and maybe it might sneak into somewhere else too, slowly, slowly.
Because as you're describing what you're describing, there's a relief in getting it out into the air, for me, as I'm hearing you talking, because I hear people talk about that level of leadership quite a lot in my work. But the way you describe it is just kind of is taking the pressure out of it. It's how people deal with disagreement. It's
Yeah.
beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And I think we're taking a bit of the mystique as well, which possibly takes the pressure away. And that's part of the title, The Secret Life of Boards. We were at a networking event recently talking about this topic, and someone was saying, God, our whole organization is in a kind of monthly cycle of the board's coming up, the board, we can't decide that. That's got to go to the board. We've got to prepare this for the board. And then the board happens and no one knows what happened. And then things come out and you have to respond to them. And in the middle, there's this kind of magical thing, and people don't quite know what happens in there or why. And so then you don't necessarily think you can apply for board positions, and perhaps you've got a lot of apprehensions about what being in that sort of group and having that sort of role would be like. And then you get in there. I've been a trustee on a few boards, and I'm a trustee of a charity at the moment. And you realize it's just a different kind of meeting. It's and it's a group of people trying to do something together. And I think opening the door, a bit of the window, a bit of fresh air, demystifying boards is really helpful for making board roles more accessible, people thinking they can contribute, and also lowering the pressure when you're around the table.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think normalizing it is really, really important. And when we came to the interviews, we'd had some idea of the scenarios that might crop up. And so we asked our interviewees about each of these scenarios. And they all had a story to tell in the various different categories, more than one. And I think it, as you said, Claire, it's also about leaning into the pressure of the board, and that's quite it's quite cathartic to do that. What one of our interviewees said, I spent my whole career as an executive trying to avoid conflict and manage things so there was no conflict. Then I became a chair and I realized actually what I should be doing is letting it expose itself, let it come out, because that way we can manage it, and we can be honest, and we can work our way through together.
Yeah, completely. And we're working with boards and teams in general. Some teams will present themselves as very healthy because we never have conflict or disagree. And I think that's a real, for me, that's a real red flag. Well, either you're all cookie cutters, and so, really you're not more than the sum of one of your parts, or this collaboration, the constructive conflict, the way that you collectively get to more than some of your parts isn't happening. So helping people feel comfortable with what's uncomfortable, the conflict, and also to gauge and to understand what you might do if it's moving into something that feels unhealthy or unhelpful. And thinking, one of our interviews was saying, so people tend to think it's the chair that has that responsibility. And to some extent, I think that is a really important role of the chair and the senior independent director, just to be monitoring the mood and how helpful a discussion is in the moment and over time. Are factions building and are people stopping listening to each other, that kind of thing. So that you can keep having a difficult conversation without it sort of splitting or polarizing. Someone was one of the interviewees was saying that a bit of conflict is incredibly healthy and you need it, and that's all part of the process. But you need to notice also when people are just throwing rocks at each other. I think that's entirely true.
So much richness from the co-creation of the book.
Yes.
And I'm just really interested. Share with us some of the post-co-creation richness. What have you seen happening?
Well, between ourselves or
Or the
in the world.
stories that people have told you. I read your book and.
Well, I think the stories that we've, I think the main point that I'm taking from those that have read it is those that have really experienced, have had 40 years worth of career between in charitable sector through to PLCs, because obviously often you have a portfolio of boards that you're sitting on. They've just said, this is so spot on. This is really what's happening in practice. A chair of a charity wrote to me saying, actually, I wish I'd had this, earlier on in my career. I would have had it in my back pocket. It really would have helped me, and I passed it on to my team. So, these are stories that we've really been buoyed by. And and it's going towards as we wanted it to do, getting the message across that, this is supposed to be when we first wrote the book, and I was telling friends about it, somebody said to me, well, this sounds like a really, really negative book. Who would read it? And the bottom line was, we wanted to show, the good practice, the ways in which, good leaders of organizations are really creative and help being and co are collaborative in bringing people together. And that's what we wanted to highlight and show. And I think we've done that with the positive stories of how these many people have turned situations down. Most board members had an existential crisis at some point in their career where, the organization was likely to fail through nowadays a reputational problem or a financial problem, and them being able to share what they did in order to do that, it's really, really helpful to organizations as well as individuals.
And a lot of books about people together are about teams, aren't they? And they ha kind of have an assumption about frequency and connection and contact and location, and even if they're about hybrid teams. Whereas, you're describing people who have a very unique thing, and it takes a lot of making your own meaning to read this book over here. And you think, oh yeah, if I can make meaning in my board role, then that it means this and this one over here. But you have to go through a lot of weeds to find the gold, don't you, that really applies to your very specific thing, whereas this is giving it to people.
I completely agree. And the thinking about people that have read it, and I was thinking about when I read a fiction book, a lot of the enjoyment comes through identifying with characters, I guess, thinking, oh, I felt that or I've been there, and then seeing them work through things, and you pick up a bit of wisdom or advice along the way, maybe a bit of hope that things can get better. And maybe, you know, that's how we, well, that's the purpose of stories, I guess, that they pass this kind of knowledge down through generations. And I have had a number of people say, you know, I was reading each of the scenarios and thinking, yes, as Joy was saying, that I've been there and I recognize that. And that it helps people feel normal, feel that these things happen to most people. And there are things that are in your hands potentially that you can do. You know, there aren't any silver bullets, and we don't promise them. But you know, a combination of small things can really make a difference. And to feel that through the book, they're getting advice from people that have been there and done it, the people that we interviewed. It's almost, you know, having a mentor, I suppose. And the other thing I've noticed is that people have been giving it to bored colleagues. And in the book, we're saying it's so important that this is really about focusing on yourself, self-awareness, and then what can you do to improve your relationships and strengthen them, and then maybe use a few tactics, which, you know, to improve how things are. But it's not really about diagnosing your colleagues, but there is a, I think there's a desire to start a conversation by sharing a book between a group of bored colleagues and then talking about it. It's a bit like a book group, a really specialist and kind of specific book group to say, what does this mean for us? And it's a way of meaning making, I guess, helping people, giving a structure and a bit of provocation to make sense of a particular set of circumstances.
And you, it feels like a user guide. You know, it's not a directive user guide, but it feels like, you know, this is a thing that you can have on the tube.
Yes.
I love that it's short sentences, short sections. I love that it has big margins. And do you know, that's the biggest negative feedback that I got about my first, about simplifying coaching. And it's the thing that people have said the most about the next book, The Human Behind the Coach, because what you've done is you've given people a space to make your book their own.
Ah,
That's interesting. Yeah,
I love
that's
that way of
interesting.
thinking about it. One of the things I really love, someone sent a picture of their copy bulging with post-it notes and things that they wanted to go back to. And it was the nicest compliment, actually, because even though there's a lot of space to write in, there was more they wanted. They'd written their own book, kind of using ours as a skeleton. And that's an amazing thing.
I think the other amusing story that's coming to me, to my mind, is we had someone come up and say, "Oh, it's not a beach read, is it? It's rather deep." We thought, "Yes," and I have to read it quite slowly, and I have to think about it. Yes, and we thought, "Yeah, no, that's good, that's good." But we've done it in an accessible, way. We've talked about the art of board relationships, in the sense of opening up your awareness, relating to people. The R is relating to people properly, and spending that time, as you say, Claire, to connect outside these board meetings that are very few and far between sometimes. And then the tactics side, looking at tools and techniques for helping you through the process.
You've structured it so that it's easy to read a bit. And actually, that is not true of a lot of books. So, kudos.
Oh, thank you for that.
That
We
means
have.
a lot. Thank you.
Can I just give you a little tip, which was given to me by a coach called Alard de Jong? He said to me, "Have you bought your Kindle, the Kindle version of any of your books?" And I said, "No, why would I do that? I've got plenty of copies of my book, thank you." And he said, "No, because if you get the Kindle edition, then you can see where everyone else is highlighting. So then you can begin to get a sense of how the reader is interacting with the book. So that gets you inside your post-it person."
That's fabulous. I'm definitely going to do that. I'm not a Kindle reader, but I'd love to see. And so you can also see how far people get with it as well, I think, can't you? And if they kind of abandon, because I had a pet peeve about business books, particularly where I read the first half and then I've kind of got it all in the second half. I'm like, we just put that in there to have a book long. So we wanted the whole thing to be full of interesting and useful things. So I really hope either that people read it to the end, or as you're saying, we kind of structured it so that you might look across the title, see a situation that you're in, or we're in a bit of a standoff situation, and just read that, and they stand alone.
It's very dippable.
Dippable, exactly.
Yeah.
Because the book you're describing, I don't even get through the first half. Dippable is what matters, isn't it?
Well, I think that you can go to it and quickly get what you need, and that it's but it's not a superficial thing, because occasionally I think, oh, I need something, and I'll read an article and think, yeah, I kind of, it's not there, it's not there. So I think, yes, that you can kind of quickly go to something, but there's, when you do, there's a bit of depth there and something to get your teeth into and take away.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so just
Absolutely.
some of the feedback was that, is it just a book for new board members or aspiring board members or new coaches and aspiring coaches to coach boards and teams? And our view was, well, if you're in the middle of a crisis or a particular scenario, you want something, that's quickly to hand to do that. So thank you for saying it's difficult. That really means it hit the mark. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it feels very, very dippable. And I'm thinking about feedback that I get. So it's not a beach read. I love that. But actually, somebody said to me last night about simplifying coaching that's also in small chunks. He said, I'm glad you wrote it in small chunks because I can only tolerate one.
Yes.
And I hope that's true for your book too, because isn't that a beautiful piece of feedback? I can only
That's
tolerate one small chunk because I need to then process it and think about it and deal with it, make meaning from it. That's a wonderful thing. So that's what I
it
hope for your book. I hope that people can only tolerate one chunk at a time, but then they come back for the next one.
I love that. Almost like a daily or weekly or monthly dose of something, or on
Yeah.
demand when you need it.
Exactly.
One of the nicest compliments I had was from one of my business partners, who said it's deceptively deep. So yes, people will take one of these deceptively deep pills from time to
Exactly,
time and
because
really enjoy them.
because it doesn't need to be worthy to be deep.
No, absolutely.
No, I think we wanted it to be simple but not simplistic. And actually that takes a lot of effort. Sometimes it took us 20 iterations. I mean, I remember the first chapter took us 20 iterations to get to the final thing. And it took us 4 years to write. And I think that was because we were constantly trying to make it accessible and simple, but not simplistic.
Yeah, and we were writing, we had imaginary readers in mind. There's an interesting process to write together and to find a common voice, and then to think. So someone, we had someone called Alex who is new to boards, and he had an age profile, and then someone else who's perhaps a chair of a board, and she's had a long board career in different things. And we're thinking, so when we were thinking about a paragraph or trying to get it right and what should it look like, we were really thinking, well, how would they read it and what would they need and what would they want? And that was really helpful.
Amazing. So the book is called The Art and Psychology of Board Relationships, The Secret Life of Boards by Joy Harkup and Helen Hopper. And I'll put a link in the show notes. So Joy and Helen, how do people get in touch with you if they want to talk?
Well, for
I'm on
me.
LinkedIn. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're both on. Yeah, I'm on
Okay.
LinkedIn too. That's the
Fab.
easiest way, definitely.
Yeah, and I'm
So
currently working with Priester International, which is an international group of coaches who coach boards and also teams and individual executive coaching.
Peter Shaw. I
Yes.
should get him on the podcast.
You should. He's written many more books than me. I think
I know.
it's 26 at the last count.
There you
Wow.
are. There's a teaser. Thank you for coming. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And have a good week. Bye bye.
Bye. Thank
Bye
you.
bye. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, we'd love you to share the podcast with a friend or leave a comment on social media. And if you'd like to become a regular at The Coaching Inn, you can subscribe on Podbean and all major podcast channels. We look forward to welcoming you next time. You've been listening to The Coaching Inn, 3D Coaching's virtual pub. For more information, check out 3dcoaching.com.